the What's the Crack podcast with Anthony Martin.
Listen in live weekly on Brighton's Radio Reverb.
See whatsthecrack.co.uk and radioreverb.com for showtimes.
Keith Farnan is an Irish comedian who once had said about him that if Eddie Izzard had been Irish, he'd surely have turned out a lot like Keith Farnan. He's appeared on Michael McIntyre's Comedy Roadshow on BBC, Just for Laughs All Access on the Canadian Comedy Network, Holland's highest rating comedy show, The Comedy Factory, and in America, he's appeared on Showtime's stand-up show Live from Amsterdam. He's performed all over the world, has a string of Edinburgh Fringe shows under his belt, and this Friday and Saturday, the 11th and 12th of March, he performs at the Comedia here in Brighton. Here's a little clip from his performance on Michael McIntyre's Comedy Roadshow.
What's nice for me is I travel a lot over to England. I gig a lot in England. It's wonderful being an Irish comedian over in England because English women love Irish men. We are worshipped over there. We are worshipped. And you ask them, what do they love about us? And every one of them will tell you it's the accent. The accent. They love the accent. They never say the body, by the way. I have yet to hear one woman going, ooh, I love the pale white pasty skin. And the Guinness belly.
On the phone with me right now, it's Irish comedian Keith Farnan. Hello, Keith.
Hi there, how are you?
How are you? Good, how are you?
Hanging in there.
Now, I was going to say, because you tour a lot of outside of Ireland, you must get that job description a lot, Irish comedian. Does that raise or lower expectations, do you think?
I think the one thing it does, actually, is it gives you a head start on nearly, I think, every other comedian in the world, maybe bar Scottish. I think that there isn't a country in the world you stand on stage and the MC goes, you know, oh, and now it's an Irish comedian, and the crowd go, oh, this is going to be lovely, as opposed to, you know, and now an English comedian, because there's a lot of countries, I mean, they own for a while, you know, as opposed to the Irish, where they're like, oh, the Irish, they're always nice, and you know, and nearly everyone has a nice experience story with the Irish, which is kind of like, if I wasn't Irish, I would pay to be Irish, like, I would actually, if I was any other nationality, like, if I was from anywhere else, I would just, you know what, I'm going to pay a bit of money, get an Irish passport, put on the accent, because it just makes life so much easier. When you're telling, like, half the time they just want you to talk. They don't even want you to tell it, you know, they don't even need a joke. They're just like, oh, just whisper in our ears, just whisper one at a time in our ears. And that'd be a strange gig if you had to individually whisper into each audience member's ear. But, you know, some people are into that. You know, so I don't know.
Yeah, it could be something you could do if your career goes south, you know, you could do that.
Well, or else you come up with the one greatest joke that only billionaires understand, and you tell that one joke to billionaires around the world, and they laugh so much at that one joke, and you whisper in their ear that they pay you a fortune, and then you can retire. I mean, that's got to be the dream. You know, everyone dreams of Wembley. Some of us just dream of one guy who's got a billion and is willing to pay you a fortune for that one joke.
It's a good strategy. It's a really good strategy. What was I going to say? You're from Cove and Cork, aren't you? It's kind of best known for the Titanic.
Yeah, that's thanks for bringing that up again, man. I mean, we're trying to let that go. We're trying to let that go, you know. I mean, it wasn't, I know, you know, every time everyone reaches for the Titanic, we're like, well, look, we didn't build the iceberg. We didn't float it out there. It's not our fault, you know, because they built it in Belfast and then they say we sank it, so we're cursed. But it was a nice place to go, you know, in terms of growing up there was quite nice because you had the harbour there and you could sort of just, you know, you could go out. Like, anyone could have, like, sailing is always seen as a sort of very elite sport. But actually, you know, it was, you know, there's all sorts of scouts and things, and most lads had sort of dinghies and boats. And it was actually quite a nice way to grow up. You could just sort of go out and sail into the harbour, and there was very little chance of you sort of accidentally sailing out to Spain, because it was quite a nice place to sort of, you know, sail.
Yeah, and how did you get into comedy then, after living in Cove? How did you get into it?
Just years of neglect, and no, it's just sort of, it's funny, I don't know, man. But it's like, basically, I was always sort of doing little theatre things and stuff like that, and you know, but it was fun. I was never the funny guy. I'm still probably not to many people, but I was never the funny guy in class. Like, I was always the guy who, you know, there would be two or three lads would make a joke, then the next joke, then I would be the fourth guy who would say something that killed the joke. And I did that quite a lot. And people still can't quite believe that I'm, you know, this is my job. They can't quite understand how that happens. But I think it's different. It's a different setup, really, from just being able to tell stories to your mates to actually being able to walk on stage and just sort of, you know, construct, you know, these, I've done like 5 or 6 Edinburgh shows now, and I've pretty much toured, you know, everywhere, and it's a very different beast to sort of walk in out. And I sort of came from an improv and a theatre, like I did a bit of improv and theatre when I was, you know, sort of younger in college, and then I went out to Australia and did a bit out there. And, you know, improv is great, but after a while you start thinking, you know, it'd be nice if you could just write something and then do it yourself, and that's basically what happened.
Yeah, and you actually studied law first, didn't you? What kind of prompted the change?
Yeah. I mean, law was great for intern. You know, everyone says, "Oh, you know, you did law and then you did comedy. That's a crazy leap." But it's not really, because it just gives you the confidence to stand in front of people and lie spectacularly, except, you know, in a funny way as opposed to a cunning way, I suppose.
And there must be some kind of crossover as well, you know, kind of analysing and constructing
arguments. Yeah, I always think that, especially with a lot of my shows, they're quite political and things like that. You know, my last show, and I kind of enjoy the sort of putting together, like, you know, a lot of, you know, my stand-up shows are like putting together one long sort of argument with jokes. Like last year, I did Edinburgh, I did a show about privacy and how, you know, how it's disappeared. I had a baby girl about a year and a half ago, and I noticed that so many friends were posting so much online, and the sort of more I looked into, you know, sort of the lack of privacy and how we've just given it away, the scarier it got. I mean, I'm not in any way a conspiracy theorist, but I it's mind-boggling when you get into how much information is being sort of, you know, harvested of our lives and our kids' lives, you know. And we're sort of, it's getting younger and younger now. They're getting targeted, you know, for things, and it's scary.
It's weird times, isn't it? It's very, very strange times on that front. So your other shows then, they've all been kind of, as you said, political. You've had one on economy, racism, death penalty, feminism. How do you come up with the ideas, and how do you make them funny?
Well, the first answer is, to be honest with you, it's just sort of the ideas happen because, say, for instance, the one I did in the economy was after, you know, everything crashed at home and, you know, like everyone else, you know, had to leave Ireland. And looking back at it, I actually turned it into a documentary for RTE. I did this hour stand-up show where I tried to break down how Ireland fell apart. And then we went back and I did the stand-up show, filmed it in Trinity in Dublin, and then you know, interviewed everyone from like Mick Wallace to, you know, like a lot of sort of various analysts and you know, looking at how the regulation let us down. And so the stand-up could do the entertainment while I could do the I'm really sort of fond of the sort of documentary stand-up sort of hybrid, you know, where you can sort of, you know, talk about stuff on stage and that's the entertainment. And then, like, it was horrific what they got away with. And it's just, it's sort of still sort of boggles the mind how they're coming back. You know, I mean, Fianna Fáil should have been wiped out like the Lib Dems over here, but, you know, there they are. They're still going. So I mean, basically, I think a lot of it is very organic. I think the death penalty show came from the fact that I was a student in America working against the death penalty. There was a show I did called No Blacks, No Jews, No Dogs, No Irish, which came about at the time when a lot of far-right parties were rising up through the ranks in England and across in Europe. And even Ireland. My favorite story is when the Neo-Nazi Alliance came to Ireland and they tried to raise money for a party. And after about a year, they left and they said they were leaving Ireland because it just wasn't fascist enough. And I just thought, that's a brilliant, like, they should have that in every airport in Ireland. like Bord Fáilte, welcome to Ireland. We're just not fascist enough. You know, it's sort of like, it was a disappointment, that was a failing for them.
Now, I suppose, like, I actually went to see your Money, Money, Money show back in Edinburgh Fringe a few years ago. You were quite hands-on with the audience, which I was surprised about, because, you know, it's a very political show. Has that ever backfired, or have you got more gold from it than not?
Let's be clear how you mean hands-on, just in case anyone's listening and going sort of, so what was he touching them? This is like, I mean, do you mean like in terms of like confronting them or talking to them or?
Yeah, just kind of, I suppose, kind of interacting, I guess, more than hands-on.
Yeah, no, I think it's funny. This is a debate that goes, there's a lot of debate, sort of, people who have time to debate this sort of thing about comedy debate the idea of theatre versus club. Like, they say, oh, there's a club comedian and he does very broad-ranging stuff, and then there's the theatre comedian who does very niche stuff. And I think that's a terrible, you know, a comedian's a comedian. You do what you do. So I tour a lot of clubs around England, and of course you get heckled and stuff happens, and you integrate into the show. And I think that's just the skill you get from gigging in clubs. Like, I'm doing the Comedia in Brighton, you know, that's a club. I'll be able to bring in some, you know, sort of more political elements, but, you know, not as much as I would do in a theater, but still, I can sort of adapt to both. And I think that it's fun. I mean, God, if you're not talking to the people in front of you, who are you talking to? So I kind of enjoy it.
Yeah, I thought it was great, actually, the way you kind of interact, and you were quite quick-witted as well, which is really, really...
I think that's, again, that's an Irish thing, man. I think so many Irish comedians do well abroad, because when we start at home, if you can imagine, an American friend of mine pointed it out to me. He said, you walk into any Irish bar, and all you see are tables of people telling stories, and the tables are filled with other people waiting to tell their story. Because Irish storytelling is like a blood sport. If you drop that story for a second, like if you fluff a line, like some of the lads will just step in and go, listen, I've got a better story. So I think that when you're a stand-up at home, you have to, if you're going to stand in front of a room of people at home and tell a story, you better be the quickest in the room. Yeah. And you're often not. Like, I've been nailed at home before when I started out by heckles and lads saying something. It was just a little bit quicker. And you get, the more you go, the quicker you get. But certainly I think when you get to England, you're ready for anything.
Now, you appeared on Michael McIntyre's Roadshow in 2011. How was the reaction after that appearance?
Oh, that was great. I mean, to be honest with you, I was still doing open spots around parts of England. And I like where open spots are basically where, comedy clubs ask you to come in and do 10 minutes to see what you like. And I did that, and suddenly they were sort of ringing back and saying, oh, listen, could you come headline the club? And it just sort of, it saved me probably 3 or 4 years of just slogging around the place. And also, I mean, it was shown in across Europe, like in places like Holland and Scandinavia, and again, it's been great because I've just managed to do a lot of festivals across Europe because of that, and I did a lot of sort of TV shows for Showtime and various Dutch channels and HBO and did the Just for Laughs. So yeah, it was great. It was a lovely sort of it came along. Just I suppose, looking back as well, it's a very different thing to what I do now. It's very sort of a clubby set, but it's fine because I've sort of kept going in the same vein, personality wise, but just in terms of material and content is different now.
Yeah, and you're performing at the Comedia in Brighton on Friday and Saturday as well, the 11th and 12th of March. Have you performed there before?
Yeah, no, I love the Comedia. It's great. It's got this great... Oh, I think all great comedy clubs are in a basement. I don't know what the rule is, but it's like any great, like the Comedia in Brighton, there's the Stand up in Edinburgh and Glasgow. They're the ones with Stuart Lee. Filmed all the shows. Of course, the great Dublin one is the Comedy Cellar in Dublin, which is actually on the first floor, because that's how we do it. We don't put the cellar in the basement; we put it in the first floor. So the Comedia's always great. It was a great gig.
And what do you have ahead this year then, 2016? What's ahead?
I'm not doing Edinburgh this year. I'm taking a break from Edinburgh, so it's just a lot of writing stuff out with different people and sort of radio and TV, but yourself is just I've basically written a sitcom based on sort of what I learned about the sort of data collecting industry, which doesn't sound like much of a sitcom, but the way I've sort of done is hopefully it'll be like, oh, that's quite interesting. So yeah, that's out with a few production companies, and then hopefully a small tour at the end of the year of last year's show, because I've sort of had a lot on earlier this year. So so hopefully I'll be coming back to Brighton probably to another sort of venue later in the year.
Perfect. Keith, thanks very much for talking to us today. Thank you very much for taking the time.
No worries, man. Thanks very much.